many times have you heard a movie is all right, it's average, it's just okay? You ask your friends if you should see it and they say, meh. I'm Davey Barris and he's Darren Cross. And on this show, we'll break down and review these movies and decide once and for all if these meh movies are good or bad and whether or not you should watch them. Because on this show, there are no meh movies. Now, for a movie to qualify as meh, it must be between 40 and 60 on the tomato meter, that's Rotten Tomatoes, or 4 and 6 on IMDb. And the movie we chose this week, because someone is celebrating a birthday, it is Billy Zane's birthday. And we are doing the 1996 comic book movie, The Phantom, which scores a 43% on Rotten Tomatoes and scores a 4.9 on IMDb. Anywhere you look, it's considered a meh movie. Darren, spoiler warning, of course, spoiler warning for The Phantom and nearly 100 years worth of comic book history. Darren, in case it's been a while since they've seen it or they've never seen it before, what is The Phantom about?
The Phantom is about Kit Walker slash the Phantom, and his we sort of are learning who the Phantom is, but at the same time, our evil doer in the movie is Xander Drax, who's trying to get a hold of these three ancient skulls, because apparently if you get all three of them together, they produce a weapon that is an unstoppable force. So Kit Walker slash Phantom is trying to stop him from doing this. It takes some time for him to realize that this is what Xander is trying to do, and then becomes a sort of a race to see who can get to the skulls first.
There you go. And that's what the movie's about. If you happen to be a giant comic book fan, you know that the Phantom comic book has a ton of history behind it. This comic book first came out in the 1930s, 1936. So there is a lot of history here. They obviously were not able to fit all that history into a movie, but actually the movie does pull from some popular, I guess, storylines, you could say, in the comic books. Three in particular. Actually, most of the villains come from three different comic book stories, one called the Singh Brotherhood, one called the Sky Band, and one called the Belt. And if you've seen the movie, and we're going to talk about it in details, you can pretty much figure out which villains come from which one of these comic runs. So, Darren, the first question we ask, did the movie do what it was supposed to do? What do you say?
I said yes for this. So, I mean, looking at the genre this is supposed to be, it's just, they just kind of describe it as a superhero film. So I would say that it felt like a superhero film. I would say that it checked the boxes of what that is. There's, you know, a clear evil nemesis that of some sort that the main character is fighting. There's a love interest, which seems to happen a lot in superhero films. So yeah, I would say it did what it was supposed to do. It was certainly a superhero movie.
Okay. But yes, the definition of the word, it did do what it was supposed to do. I'm going to say the movie did not do what it was supposed to do, but it is not an indictment on this movie. I'm going to say the entire 1990s comic book movies did not do what they were supposed to do.
Well, that is a sweeping statement.
They literally did not figure out how to do comic book movies until the 2000s, right? Until the Sam Raimi Spider-Man and the X-Men franchise come around. They did not know what the hell they were doing in comic book movies. They struck gold early with Superman, with Batman 89, but then they even messed up Batman in the 90s. They didn't even know what to do with Batman in the 90s. The tone of this movie. Now, reading into some details here, apparently in the production of this movie, Jeffrey Boehm was one of the writers, but he was also working with Joe Dante. And they were originally going to do this as like a comedy movie. It was supposed to be a spoof on superheroes. It got postponed for a year. Joe Dante went away, but they still did his script when they eventually made the movie, but nobody knew it was supposed to be a comedy or something like that. That's apparently the story that's been pieced together on Wikipedia here. Yeah, the tone was completely wrong for me. And we'll get into this. We'll get into the details and successes and failures of what I was looking for in a Phantom movie. I think it could be done with the right tone. I don't think this was the right tone. So as far as I'm concerned, the movie did not do what it was supposed to do, which, yes, it fits the definition of a superhero movie, but it didn't sell me on this character of the Phantom. It didn't get me invested in the myth and the story and the legend of the Phantom. So, yeah, that's what I got to say about that one. All right, Darren, let's talk a little bit about this cast. And it's an interesting cast because you've seen these faces. You've seen these people in so many places. Everyone in this movie has an IMDb page a mile long. But you probably don't know many of their names. So the star of this movie, Billy Zane, as we said, is Kit Walker, the Phantom, our hero. Treat Williams as Xander Drax, our main villain. Christy Swanson is Diana Palmer, our damsel in distress. Who can kick some butt? Catherine Zeta-Jones as Sala, another villain. James Raymer as Quill, another villain. And that pretty much wraps up the main players in this movie with a few other cameos and bit parts in here. Darren, who is your top performer? Which of these actors or actresses brought it?
I gave this week to Treat Williams.
Oh.
So Treat played Xander Drax, who's our main villain, our main bad guy. And I thought he did a really good job. Like, he really portrayed that kind of that arrogance that I like to see out of a villain, where like he is along the whole way, despite what goes wrong, there's just an assumption that everything is going to work out in his favor. And yeah, he really sold me as a villain. You know, I think part of what you were saying about the, you know, if like the comedic script was partially or used, I think that a lot of his character was supposed to be like this, like kind of corny funniness, yes, to some capacity, which I actually found kind of funny. You know, like it was like so over the top that it was. So whether or not they meant it that way, I don't know, but it came across funny. But yeah, I thought he was a very believable villain. I was sold on his villainness, if that's a word. And yeah. So I thought it was a good performance. I thought he's a good villain. He can play that role well.
He definitely brought it. I will give you that. He committed hard to that shtick you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I will give you that one.
About you?
I don't. Can I say the little kid in the beginning?
Yeah.
Who I believe was played by Chapong Jim Petchlor.
You mean Zach?
Yeah, Zach. Can I say Al the Cabbie, played by John Capadice? I think I'm going to go with Catherine Zeta-Jones, who played the villainous pilot Sala, who led a band of women pirate pilots, which is awesome. I mean, I was going to kind of save it for quick picks, but a movie about Lady Sky Pirates, sign me up for that, led by Catherine Zeta-Jones. I think there was something here, and she ends up getting the Mask of Zorro 2 years after this, and I'm guessing this movie like might have been one of the reasons why. Yeah, like, she's fair. Kind of cast in the second woman role. Like, Christy Swanson is one of our co-leads, you could probably call it. Diana Palmer, she's not the damsel in distress, she's But she is a woman and an explorer, an adventurer who kind of gets into this mystery and gets connected with the Phantom. But I think Catherine Zeta-Jones is sort of like the second lead female character here. One of our villains, one of our, I don't want to say henchmen, but one of our villains. I think she does a really good job of selling the action, selling the comedy. Like, her timing is on the whole movie. And I could see why then she goes on to lead an action-adventure movie like Zorro 2 years later. So I'm giving Catherine Zeta-Jones my top performer.
Nice.
And having watched the trailer for Zorro, I really want to rewatch that movie now. But that's for another podcast on another day.
Who plays Zorro in that movie?
Antonio Banderas.
Ah, that's right.
Yeah. All right, Darren, that's... those are our top performers. That's who we thought brought it. Moving on, we're going to talk about themes, and then we're going to let themes lead us into successes and failures. Because obviously, for a movie to be good or bad, the theme has to succeed or fail. So, Darren, what did you see for your big theme in this movie, and was it a success or was it a failure for you?
There were two things, I guess, I saw, and I think one was a success and one was a failure. So the first one that I saw was a theme of just like greed and being power hungry. So I think they don't exactly say, unless I missed it, what year this is taking place. It seems to be like the 40s, maybe.
I think it's the 30s. I think
when it was originally written. Okay.
Yeah. 1938.
Okay.
The 21st Phantom.
Yeah.
By the way, actually, hang on. Before we get into this, let's spoil the Phantom part of things, because I feel like the continued talking we have to. So the Phantom is known by many nicknames, but one of them is the Ghost.
The Ghost Who Walks.
The Ghost Who Walks. Thank you. Thank you. And there's many more that allude to basically the fact that the Phantom cannot die.
Yeah.
The secret to the Phantom is that it's actually passed down from generation to generation. So Kit Walker is the 21st Phantom in the year 1938. The comic books take it all the way back to the 1600s.
Whoa.
So anyway, so that kind of sets the timeline for us here.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, yeah. So I think people are coming off of the 20s and 30s where things like the roaring 20s, right? So I think there's people that are trying to make it and trying to, I don't know, do big things, make money, you know, if you have like Rockefeller and that sort of thing. And so I think that's a big theme in the movie, of this sort of like never being satisfied with what you have and going for more and more and more. And I think that's a big motivation for Xander, Drax. And so I thought I would give that a success. I thought the way they portrayed that was pretty cool. The other main theme I saw, which relates back to this not being immortal. So the other theme is sort of like lineage or family tradition, or like passing the guard, or whatever you want to call it. And I gave that a fail. I didn't really feel the warm and fuzzies or the importance of the Phantom being passed down. Like, I thought it was an okay strategy that they use, that where they like, he sees the ghost of his father and he's like talking to the ghost of his father. But I don't know. I didn't really feel like the emotion or like the importance of the Phantom. Like, it didn't feel any more important than any other superhero, really. So I would have liked to maybe learn more about, you know, even older Phantoms, or like how it kind of, you know, just more backstory about how the whole thing kind of started.
I have more to say on that, but I'm going to save it for my sequel.
Cool.
I'm going to save it. I did agree with you that the big theme I was picking up, and I wrote down, the search for power corrupts. Maybe the desire for power corrupts. So obviously we've seen this in movies before, where that person striving for that ultimate power, it's something that comes up in Indiana Jones all the time, right? The person seeking out that ultimate power, it ultimately ends up corrupting them in the end. And that's what happens. Xander, Drax. That kind of happens to all our villains. This search for power, the mafiosos that are working for Xander, they all go down. But that's one of the things about the Phantom, right? He's the protector of people. He's protector of the jungle. He's not out there looking for power. He's not trying to collect the skulls himself to give himself power. In fact, one of the things about the Phantom is he has no superpowers. I was going to get into this. I was going to ask you, what do you think the powers are of this character? Because it's not very well defined in the movie. And the more research I did, the more I realized that the Phantom has never had power. He's always trained in martial arts. He's always trained in acrobatic skills. So he's super athletic, but that's it. He has no superpowers. Occasionally, sometimes he gets gadgets. In the fourth Phantom apparently had a cape and a cool hat.
Ooh.
But yeah, and his rings. His rings, but the rings are more symbols. In this one, the ring has power, but
yeah.
In the comic books, it doesn't really. So yeah, so the Phantom is the antithesis of that. He's a superhero that has no power. He's just there to protect and, hold up righteousness, hold up good. So, and I give that part a success. It was definitely very clear that the search for power corrupted our villains. All right, Darren, what else you got in successes and failures? The big things in the movie, what worked for you, what didn't?
I'll jump over to a failure. The Phantom's whole costume they didn't mesh. The world he was living in and what he was wearing and the tools he used, they all didn't make sense together. So what I actually wrote was mask plus spandex plus horse plus jungle plus guns equals weird.
When he finally got a sword in his hand, I was like, okay, this feels better.
Yeah, but for some reason, I don't know if it's, I guess it's just from superhero stuff throughout my lifetime. It's like, if you're wearing a mask like that, you belong either in the city or in the West, right? You don't belong in the jungle. It didn't feel right.
Black Panther's in the jungle.
Yeah, but that's I don't know. Yeah, that's true.
No, I know what you're saying.
That's a full suit, though. I don't know.
I know what you're saying. And he takes on the identity of the panther, a jungle animal, whereas the Phantom is purple. It doesn't fit in the jungle. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and he's in the spandex suit. And it's that doesn't look comfortable. They're in the jungle.
When you look at the comic books, when you look at the covers of the comic books, it works a little bit better than it does in the movie. Now, I will tell you, I'll give you some history here. I'm just going to run all my Phantom trivia throughout this episode. The costume is iconic in comic history because the Phantom is a transitional character in the history of comic books. He's pre-Superman. He's pre-Batman, pre-Flash. So before any of them are wearing spandex, he's wearing spandex. But he transitions from these detective comics, these Dick Tracy type characters, or these, there was one called the Phantom Detective, and he transitioned, and Zorro, and he transitions into what we know Batman and Superman and the spandex wearing heroes. And the creator of the comic book got the idea for the spandex from Robin Hood, because Robin Hood is always portrayed on screen or on stage in green spandex and green tights. So he thought that look worked. So he kind of pulls from Robin Hood. He pulls from Zorro to kind of create this character, the Phantom. But then one of the things that's iconic is that it was the first comic book character to not show the pupil of his eyes. So when he's wearing the mask, when he's in the Phantom suit, the eyes are just white underneath the mask. Mm. And it would go on to inspire Batman, and it would go on to inspire countless comic book characters, the Ninja Turtles, things like that, who all have that because it gives them a more intimidating look when they have the mask on.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so the costume is iconic, but absolutely doesn't work in this movie.
It does not work. Yes. Immediately, I was like, "Where are we? Who is this?"
Well, adding on to that with the guns and the fighting, my big fail for this movie is that the action just does not work for me. It felt like I was watching 1966 Batman, Adam West Batman, with the booms and the pows and the zaps. Like the way that the choreography of the fight scenes, like I'm glad it was wide shots, but it was too wide. It looked like a stage play. And he looked the way he moved in the spandex, he would like pranced around with his guns. When he was watching the pirates and he had to like go down like five or six steps to get a better vantage point, it was the weirdest little prance with his guns out. He shoots cross-armed. That's a terrible way to shoot. You're not going to hit anything. And then
he went Boondock Saints style.
And then the pirates looked like they were from Captain Hook's army. They looked like they were from Peter Pan. The one guy was even wearing the white and red horizontal striped shirt. And they were doofuses. They get caught in the giant pirate net. Yeah, the action just... I felt like I was watching Peter Pan or Adam West Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it was, as funny as it is to laugh about now, it was a total fail in the movie.
So along with that, I will switch over to a success, though, that's related. I did like the chase scenes. I thought the chase scenes were done well. Of all the overall, the action, I agree, was bad. But the chase scenes I thought were pretty good. So like you have the one where they take him and Diana steal the plane, Phantom and Diana steal the plane, and then they're like going to land it sort of in the forest and they're being chased. But like the fastest horse in the world ever is keeping up with the plane. and then the chase scene continues where they're on the horse through the jungle. There's a car chase scene when they go, cause it halfway through the movie, they spend some time in New York City. There's a car chase scene. I thought the chase scenes were actually done pretty well. I enjoyed those, but besides that, yes. Yeah.
It helps that the henchmen all went to the stormtrooper school of shooting. We can't hit anything with these guns. All right. I'd love to jump on the success train with you, but I'm going for another fail.
Okay.
Now, it's very easy to compare this, the Phantom, to Batman. They wear the spandex. They have this code of, you know, stopping villains and stopping pirates and crime. And they both kind of have this, like, rich upbringing with this family secret.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to compare.
The layer's a cave.
Yeah, it's very easy to compare. I think why Batman works, and especially let's even look at the 89 Batman, and why this movie in 96, this is a fail for me, is Kit Walker versus Bruce Wayne. Not the Phantom versus Batman. It's Kit Walker versus Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne is so layered and dark and disturbing. You know, messed up inside, and he's dealing with real demons. Kit Walker has none of those things. He had no internal strife. He had no conflict going on in him. He was a happy-go-lucky jungle guy. Like, that's what was missing. The only thing that, you know, he had was that he didn't even know his father was murdered by Quill. You know, that's a revelation in, like, the third act.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's where the miss was for me. Like, that's why a character like Batman could be so successful in this iteration, at least, of the Phantom. I can't speak for the Phantom history. I'm sure there are tons of things in the comic book lore. But the way he's presented on screen here, the Kit Walker character needed so much more depth to work.
Yeah, a good example, I think, based on how you're saying it, is like, in the Batman, they are like, they show his parents being murdered, right?
Yeah.
And then he's like, kind of like, he's not an orphan necessarily, but he sort of is, you know, doesn't really have an exact parent figure in his life. And so like, and so that kind of goes back to what I was saying too, about like why the lineage thing or the passing down of the Phantom was a fail for me. Cause maybe, you know, I'm sure there was everything, a along the way wasn't all that great, and maybe one of the Phantoms died when he was like a kid or so. I don't know. You know, I don't know. There's things you could have done to kind of make it a deeper story.
Who knows? Maybe when we pitch our sequels, we'll have an idea for that.
Yeah.
Maybe Paramount Studios listening.
Definitely.
Anything else in successes and failures?
I have another failure I wanted to put out was, so I really liked Diana at first. I thought she was actually like a cool character. So she's the love interest who's played by Christy Swanson.
Who may know as Buffy the Vampire Slayer from the movie.
Yeah.
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 Who you may know as, hang on, I have one more Christy Swanson. She was also in Ferris Bueller, but like not in a prominent role.
Was she just like one of the high school kids or something like that?
Yes. I think she's the one that tells the teacher that he's not there or that he's out sick. Bueller. Oh, Big Daddy. She's the girlfriend in Big Daddy that breaks up with Adam Sandler for the older guy. And then at the end of the movie, she's working at Hooters.
Right. Nice. So yeah, she was kind of in the up until they get to the Phantom's lair on the island. Does the island have a name? I don't remember if it doesn't matter.
No, Bengali. It's the Bengali.
Oh,
jungle.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes the Phantom is in Asia, in an Asian country, sometimes Africa. It kind of bounces all around.
Okay. Up until the scene where they're in his lair behind the waterfall, she's like tough and like a badass character, and then she like turns into like this like damsel in distress, like I don't know, there was this noticeable switch where all of a sudden she's like and she's like feels faint and like is like her tone of voice changes, where she's all of a sudden she's like real like soft and like I don't know, there was a noticeable change where like she was like this tough badass chick who was like, I'm just gonna go to Asia by myself, I don't care what my dad says or my uncle, I don't care what my uncle says, I'm going to Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden she's like this like damsel in distress sort of thing, and it really was unfortunate because I liked her as the tough lady.
Well, speaking of characters, I do have another fail. I didn't want to jump all over your love for Treat Williams, but do you realize that Xander Drax narrates everything that he does and thinks throughout the whole movie? He has no internal thoughts. He doesn't ponder a thing. He just says it all out loud. Hang on, villains. Hang on, pirates. I got a deal for you. We can make a deal here. I can get myself out of this situation. Hey, everybody. Like, it's just, it was a fail for me. I'm sorry. It didn't work as a, if it were a comedic movie, yes. I get that they were trying to do some old 30s gangster stuff like in this movie. Yeah.
I just pick up on that. That's funny though.
Yeah. All right, Darren, should we move into, should we take a look at the Rotten Tomatoes critics?
Yeah.
Should we see what they got to say? I did not pre-screen any of these.
Ooh.
I ask every week, do you want to start fresh or do you want to start rotten?
Let's go with the rotten first.
All right. Peter Travers from Rolling Stone. You've heard his name many times. His rotten review: expect this ghost of bad movies past to walk quickly to the back bins of Blockbuster, where it should be filed under a helpful heading, monotonous and juvenile. Now, kids, Blockbuster was a store that you went to rent movies, and then you brought them home and you had them for 48 hours. You had to make sure to rewind them and then bring them back.
Darren, yeah, it was a big responsibility.
Was this movie juvenile?
I mean, maybe he's thinking of what you were saying about how it felt like the Adam West sort of, like, maybe he's taking what could have been comedy, but wasn't fully comedy as juvenile. So like it was more of like a Sunday morning cartoon than it was a superhero movie.
Actually, this tone as like a, yeah, as a Saturday morning, like kids show, this tone actually probably works. But this also could be contributed to the fact that they just didn't think comic book movies, aside from Batman, you know, they didn't think comic book movies could be blockbuster movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there could be a little of that in there too. All right. What else do we got in Rotten Reviews? Jonathan Rosenbaum from the Chicago Reader, he says, if Treat Williams were the Phantom and Billy Zane the capitalist villain, would any significant nuance be lost? That's an interesting take. Could you see Billy Zane being the villain and Treat Williams being the Phantom?
Yeah, maybe.
I could absolutely see Billy Zane being the villain.
Oh, yeah. He just presented a side quill. Or like a, no, or an alternate.
All right, let's take a look at some of the fresh reviews. Mark Savlov from the Austin Chronicle says, a throwback to the days when superheroes were basically cheerful, gun-toting guys in tights. What day is that? When were the heroes cheerful, gun-toting guys in tights?
I don't know. The other superheroes, how many superheroes carry guns? Very few.
The Punisher?
Yeah, but he doesn't dress up. Right? He wears that shirt.
Well, he wears his vest, yeah.
Yeah.
Who else carries a gun? Not many.
Yeah.
Falcon? Falcon has guns? The Winter Soldier? Deadpool. He's a good guy and a bad guy.
Deadpool?
A good guy and a bad guy.
Yeah.
But... Oh, cowboys carry guns.
True.
Maybe he's like combining a memory of like a cowboy movie, like a John Wayne movie, and like a 70s Superman movie.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, those are the same thing. All right. Another fresh review. Kenneth Turan from the LA Times says, it's nice to see some things done the old way. Was there a nostalgia to this movie?
I mean, I could see that if you really loved those like Adam Westy Batmans, then I could see how that was nostalgic because it, like you said in the beginning of this, it did kind of feel like that. So if that's what you wanted, you know, if you wanted a 90-minute Adam West Batman show, then yeah, I could see how this could be nostalgic for you.
I also think the filmmaking was pretty old school. Aside from the skulls shooting lasers out of their eyes, was there any other CGI? Everything else felt very practical, felt very in camera.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of green screen stuff with the airplanes, but
yeah.
Yeah. So there was that, you know, it was a simpler time of making movies.
1996.
All right, Darren, thank you to the Rotten Tomatoes critics. You are always entertaining, interesting. Your takes are fascinating. We now see how this ends up, where it does on Rotten Tomatoes. Darren, it's time for us to have a little fun. It's time for us to pitch a sequel. Now, we all know that we take the term sequel to be very loose here on the No Meh Movies podcast. I think for our first two movies of season three so far, we have pitched sequels, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay. What do you got for me? What's your sequel?
I'm going to pitch an actual sequel again. So as far as I understand it, the Phantom can have a kid, but still be the Phantom until they die. And that's when their child would become Phantom.
Or they could retire from old age.
Okay. Got it. So what if, our current Phantom, what if Kit, stays solid for a long time, has a child, him and Diana have a child, but he stays Phantom for a while. However, he gets corrupt and he becomes an evil Phantom.
What?
Yeah. And so the sequel is that his child, I don't know what we're going to call him, Sebastian essentially has to become the Phantom prematurely to make his dad, who is still claiming to be the Phantom, make him understand that he's being a crazy person, you know, put his wits back together with help from Diana. So that's the movie. So sort of like, I guess when I was thinking about this, I was kind of thinking about whichever Spider-Man had the Green Goblin in it, where you have like William Dafoe and what's his face? Who plays his
Tobey Maguire. Oh, his son is James Franco.
Yeah. Right. So sort of like a situation like that, where like it's not clear who's evil or not evil, but they're like sort of together, but also sort of against each other. So sort of like a situation like that. But I mean, I think James Franco ends up being evil, but in this case, Sebastian ends up being not evil.
Yeah. This is like the inverse of that. This is like,
yeah,
they were the villains. Inverse. These are heroes.
Yes.
Okay.
But I mean, the relationship is similar, but rather than two villains, it's two heroes.
Interesting. He's got to pull his dad back from the brink.
Yep.
All right. Well, there's Darren's movie. I'm going prequel on you.
Ooh.
I'm pitching. So, okay. The thing to me is that there is a really cool, dark, gritty Phantom movie to be made. So I'm going all the way back to the beginning. And I'm calling mine The Phantom Year One.
So like 1600?
Yeah. We're going back to the 1600s.
Okay.
So in the original comic book, his dad, he's on the pirate ship. And this was going to be kind of one of my quick picks, but I'm going to use it here. So they narrate the open of this movie, right? It's like a 30, maybe even less, 20-second narration where there's like, yeah, there was a kid. He was on a boat with his dad. It got attacked by pirates. The dad died. The kid gets taken in by an African tribe, given a ring, and now he's the Phantom. It was basically how the movie started. Show that. It could be so cool. Like, let us see. So the original Phantom, apparently in the comic book lore, and it changes throughout the years, but like his dad was on a ship. He was on a ship with his dad. It was attacked by pirates. He swore vengeance against the pirate that kills his dad. And when he finally kills that pirate, his dad's murderer, he picks up the skull and makes an oath on the skull to like uphold vengeance and fight crime and pirates and villains. And he makes an oath on the skull of his father's murderer. Like, that is dark.
That is dark.
That'd be so cool in a movie. And then the movie is about him fully understanding what this oath means and becoming the Phantom and developing the Phantom, and make it a swashbuckling pirate movie. I want to be on pirate ships. I want to fight with swords. Like, let's do it.
Yeah, and you could, you would have the time if you wanted to develop the relationship between him and his father, so that when his father is executed, it's meaningful. And
absolutely. Yeah, the father doesn't die until, we got to go at least 20, 30 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
Probably 20 minutes would be a good, right at the end of Act One.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's what I'm pitching. The Phantom Year One.
I like it.
All right, Darren. It is time for quick picks. It's time for our nitpicks of the movie. It's time to pick out those last little things we liked. What do you got for me? This is our favorite segment in quick picks.
Oh, I got a lot. I got a lot this week. My first one is, no, that bridge does not look like it'll hold that truck. No, it doesn't. But it was hilarious that they made the kid drive the truck.
That kid was cool. As far as kid actors go, he was pretty good.
That leads into my second one, is that there's no way that kid's name is Zach. It's just not, that might come across as prejudice or whatever, but cannot be named Zach.
I'm guessing that's a nickname that the British colonists, you know, gave him. Probably not his birth name. Probably the way the Americans and the British know him.
All right, fair enough.
Well, I got one with that. Was Quill trying to elbow the kid in the head when the kid laughs at him because the map's upside down? He goes to elbow him in the head. The kid ducks and he elbows his buddy in the shoulder instead.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about that kid.
No. So I think this is the Phantom, the myth of the Phantom is basically the inverse of the Dread Pirate Roberts from Princess Bride. But in that, you're supposed to be a pirate. You're supposed to keep up the evil, the myth of the evil Dread Pirate Roberts. Here, it's the inverse. It's the Phantom that stops the pirates.
Oh, those worlds could collide.
Actually, Cary Elwes, in his youth, probably would have made a really good Phantom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know that it was supposed to be like heavy-duty ropes or something like that, but do you really think the bridge could flip over and the truck could not fall?
Yeah, convenient. We have a lot of problems with the opening of this movie, don't we? I want to know how the Phantom caught up to the truck. He jumps off the horse and then catches up to the truck.
Very fast.
Was he jumping off of treetops?
Yeah, that's right. I was like, if he was dressed up more as like a Tarzan figure, it would have been more believable.
Yeah.
I needed a loincloth or something.
That'll be the tagline for this episode. I needed a loincloth. All right, what else you got?
So the wolf and the horse can talk to each other?
Yep, I had that down too. I got a little bit more about them, but I'm going to save it for this week's lesson.
They speak the universal language of animal.
Yes, they do. No. They clearly were talking to each other. I got a quick pick about our villain, Xander Drax, and the librarian that he calls into his office.
Mm.
I did not know that there was a librarian client privilege. He's like, who are you telling about the books I'm reading? No one, I swear. And then Death by Microscope. That's a new one. That's a villainous plot right there. By the way, while you're here, look in my microscope.
You'll never guess there's little blades that come out of it. Oh my God. Now I just like thinking about like the library detective from Seinfeld. Like
Bookman. The library detective's name is Bookman?
Have you been telling Bookman the books I've been reading? No, I swear, Drax, I haven't done it. Why is the symbol of a bunch of pirates a spider web?
Because the hero is already using the skull as his symbol.
It was also one of the things that kind of felt out of place. Like it felt like it could have like, I don't know. It felt like it could have been a symbol in like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie more than, I don't know. It didn't feel, yeah.
Fair enough. I have no explanation for that one.
Yeah.
Speaking of skulls, so the power of the skulls was to break glass.
Yep. That's all he wanted to do with it.
He was yelling how powerful those skulls felt, and all it was doing was just breaking windows around him. And then they shoot lasers at a map. What was that map? That wasn't a map of the world. What world was that?
Yeah,
there was a continent that was like swooping up from the bottom.
Yeah, it seemed like a weird map.
It's very convenient that a map was around. If a map wasn't around, what would they have shot their lasers at?
Well, it's the Museum of Natural History. There's lots of maps.
Fair enough. I withdraw my quick pick.
But speaking of the museum doesn't have any actual security. Not like a, not even a guard who could be easily shot down or anything.
That's true. He did have the cops in his pocket. Drax did.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe, yeah, maybe the cops include the museum cops.
Of course. It's all the same. I did like that he stole a police horse in New York City. That was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. As much as I enjoyed the cabbie, stealing a police horse that put him back in his element in the urban jungle.
Speaking of that, though, I liked them. I think I enjoyed the movie more in New York than I did in the jungle.
Interesting.
I thought just like the whole thing worked better in an urban environment than in the jungle.
Okay. I mean, yeah, you're taking New York City gangsters and putting them in a jungle.
Yeah.
They didn't even like roll up their sleeves. They didn't even have jungle wear. That's what was missing, a costume change for the third act.
Yeah.
That really, I mean, Quill had it in the first act.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indiana Jones always finds time for it.
He sure does.
He always travels in that suit and tie, and then when adventure comes in, suddenly he's in that leather jacket.
Yeah, you're right. Is the Bermuda Triangle copyrighted?
Maybe.
Because they didn't go... The place in this movie that eats up boats and planes is not the Bermuda Triangle.
Do you remember what it was called?
The Devil's Vortex.
The Devil's Vortex. Oh, man.
Now I will say that it could easily be like an actual thing that was in the comic books, and that's why they used it. You know, I'm sure that had something to do with it, but
I did not. That is not. Yeah, that's not my lesson for the day. It's not about the Devil's Vortex. How cool are seaplanes?
They're awesome.
Amazing. I want one so bad.
Yeah, just land anywhere.
Anywhere.
There's so much more water on Earth than there is land.
Yeah, you could just fly on vacation, just land anywhere in the Caribbean.
Yep.
Anywhere along the Atlantic, the Pacific. Ah, it'd be awesome.
They're pretty awesome.
I'm just going to start naming oceans. The Indian. but what a terrible plan it is to hang on the, what is that even called? The strut of the seaplane while it's flying to the Devil's Vortex. Not a great plan.
It's the like a catamaran. What do you call this? The
pontoon. The pontoon.
The pontoon. Yeah.
His hands had to have been freezing.
That was one of mine. Specifically, I was like, you get soaking wet before you ride on the outside of an airplane. It's a horrible idea.
Yeah, the Phantom dies from hypothermia.
Yeah. All right. How effective do you think it would be to fly down a elevator cable with two crisscross guns?
Oh, very effective. Yeah, definitely. Count me in.
They usually will just go for like, you know, they get the character gets like a rag and wraps it around their hands, which also wouldn't work. But
yes. Yeah. You need every superhero needs something to zip line on.
Yes.
Yes. I'm out. You beat me in quick picks this week. It never happens.
I know. I have one more too.
Hit me.
Are they pirates or are they ninjas / samurais?
They're pirates.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's pirates from Asia.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Just the leader of the pirate guy had like a full like Fu Manchu and the, I don't know. He was very ninja-y.
He's a character actor that has been in, what's his name? Hang on one sec. That is Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa. He has been in so many things. So I can't even be so many. Anytime they needed, yeah, a ninja or an evil Asian villain or someone who knew, yeah, always him.
Yeah.
Always him.
That's fair.
He's awesome. He's cool in everything he does.
He does a great job. Yeah.
All right. All right, Darren. you ready for the lesson this week? Before we make our decision.
Yeah.
Because we burned through most of the trivia I have. My lesson this week, speaking of that horse and speaking of that wolf, did you know that they were running at fairly the same speed?
Really?
Yeah, that can't happen. Who do you think's faster, the wolf or the horse?
Damn, that's a good, I don't, you know, horses do run in races that people bet on.
But wolves run to murder things.
Yeah. I'm going to say wolf.
The average speed of a wolf, according to Google, is 31 to 37 miles per hour.
Damn.
The average speed of a horse is 55 miles per hour.
Damn.
There is no way that wolf is keeping up. No way.
A horse can run 55 miles an hour?
Yeah.
God.
And to put it in context for myself, I had to look up what a Vizsla dog could run at, because my dog is part Vizsla, and he is the fastest dog in the dog park. I'm so proud of him. And a Vizsla runs at about 40 miles per hour. So that put it in context for me. Yeah, that wolf would be left in its dust. 55 miles per hour actually might be able to keep up with that plane. That seaplane as it's coming
in. Yeah, I suppose if it was slowing down. Yeah.
All right, Darren.
Damn, 55 miles an hour.
Yeah. I don't think I have any other Phantom trivia for you. They're still doing comic books. This isn't a Marvel or DC comic book. It's been every comic book publisher has published the Phantom novels. With all that said, it is time for us to make a decision. Once and for all, the Phantom, Billy Zane. Is it a good movie? Is it a bad movie? What do you got?
It's bad.
I did not see that coming. I am shocked.
From the very start where he just felt, when we first saw the Phantom, he just felt very out of place. And the whole, like I said earlier, that threw me off from the beginning. The whole, like, his costume, the location, he had guns. It did not mesh well. And then it didn't really get much better from there. I did like Treat Williams. I thought that he was entertaining, but yeah, there are too many negative things about this movie to make it a good superhero movie. It was just, it would have made a great, like, 30-minute morning cartoon, but not a 90-minute feature film.
Well, Darren, I don't think this is going to come to a shock to anybody, but I agree. This is a bad movie. We didn't even talk about Billy Zane that much. Like, he was not convincing as an action hero. Like I said, his choreography looked like the 60s Batman. Like, Adam West was, you know, it was the same style of fighting. And nothing about the way he moved. Forget the costume. I think you could make the costume work if the person is more haunting, like in their actions and their fighting style. If they kind of stay hidden in the trees and, you know, actually act like a phantom.
Sure.
I think there's a way to make it hulking and intimidating. But yeah, this didn't work at all. And yeah, so many fails here. I think there's a good, I think it's possible. I think it would be very possible to make a good Phantom movie. I think there's hope for this character yet. There have obviously been talks about rebooting it or sequels or something like that, but it never happened. So I don't think there's any plans for a Phantom movie anytime soon. I guess Billy Zane's probably old enough at this point that he could play the old Phantom. He could probably play the dad character.
Yeah.
Passing the Phantom on to his son at this point. Billy Zane is he's a villain. I'm sorry. He's so good as a villain.
Anyway, I was actually just looking up his filmography stuff.
Did you see one of his earliest roles?
He plays a great villain. Back to the Future?
Back to the Future. He plays Match, which I didn't even know those guys had names. He's one of right. He's one of the henchmen for Biff.
One of Biff's buddies, yeah.
Yeah. I'll never not see that now.
yeah, there's something about his facial features that he kind of gives you that same feeling that you get like from the Joker, where it's like he smiles a lot, but it looks kind of maniacal all the time. You know what I mean? Like,
didn't we have that with Tom Cruise last week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, all right, Darren, that does it for the Phantom. I think we could put this episode to bed. It was interesting learning the history. It was interesting looking up the history of the character, and it makes me fascinated for what could have been.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the 96 Phantom is going down as a bad movie. All right, Darren, coming up next week, we got a release. We got a release coming out in theaters. Whoa. It's a Disney movie. It's coming out in theaters and streaming to Disney Plus. I think that premium access thing where you have to pay extra for it. Mm-hmm. But the movie coming out is called Raya and the Last Dragon. It's an animated movie from the same production company, I think, that did the Frozen movie. So it's going to be kind of in that style. It looks really good. It stars Kelly Marie Tran and Awkwafina. It looks really cool, about a young warrior girl that finds her dragon. So we, of course, had to go out and find a dragon movie to watch to get excited for Raya and the Last Dragon. And we found a gem, a perfect 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. I love when this happens. We have to have a special designation for these movies.
Perfect meh movie.
Perfect meh movie. And that would be also from 1996. Apparently, the movie Dragonheart, which is a 50% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 6.5 on IMDb, starring Dennis Quaid and Sean Connery. I am so excited to watch this movie. I love some 90s Sean Connery.
Yeah.
You can watch it on most streaming things, I think, with the Stars package. So if you want to catch up and stay with us for next week, do what me and Darren do. Do the free trial of Stars for 7 days and watch this movie. Don't forget to cancel it. And we'll remind you on next episode. Don't worry. And tune in next week and let's talk dragons and get excited for Ray and the Last Dragon by watching Dragonheart. All right.
Nope. And don't accidentally watch Lionheart. It's a very different movie.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on whatever podcasting app you are listening on. You can follow us on Twitter at No Meth Movies. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Barris. Let us know what you thought about the movies. Thanks for supporting the show, everyone. And the next time your friends ask about a movie, take a stance and tell them if the movie is good or bad. Because on this show, there are no meh movies.